Blog Talk Radio.
Show in store for you today as we
start off our show today with Darnell White. And, you know, this is it's very interesting because we just had his nephew, Chucky Booker, on a few weeks back, and now we got the uncle. And so we're going to have a good time just learning about his story. The flute man, what a beautiful instrument that is, right? Wow. And so can't wait to hear his story. And then, you know, throughout the show, we will be celebrating our indie and jazz artists on Solar Records Radio. So kick back and relax and enjoy some really good music, stuff you may not ever heard. And you definitely haven't heard some of this stuff on traditional radio and some you have. But, you know, they don't really support indie artists like we think they should, so we decided to do it. And there are other internet radio stations that do the same thing. And so that's a common link that we have because we control what we do, right? And that we're not told by anyone, this is what you have to play. We play what we love. We play for... And so this... a great opportunity for all of us, you know, for the artists, for the station to just do something that blesses everyone. Also, the second hour, Rodney Taylor is going to come out with us, a great saxophone player, old friend of mine. He's an old man, y'all. And he's my buddy. I tease him like that all the time. He's Anita Baker's saxophone player for many years, and he's been with so many guys to do his own thing. He has a TV show now, and he's busy doing all kind of stuff. And so he just checked in and said he'll be here. So that's cool. So we'll have him on the second hour. So like I said, back, relax, enjoy some of this good music. Greg and Astrid, what's up, you guys? And thanks for doing what you do. We appreciate you very much. And also Solar Records Radio. So let's get going. And also, I just want to make sure that I let everyone know that we appreciate them and thank you so much for tuning in. As per Dana Myers' request, Alisa Goatman is up next, and we're going to play her new sing. And this is called Three Chill Room. Damn. So here we go.
You can check out anytime you please. But your mind can never leave.
Come on now.
Make sure you're feeling right.
The music that just relaxes me like that and takes me there, and I am so blessed. That's my buddy Chuck Gentry right there. Much love, Chuck Gentry, from Shalimar. That's my buddy. All right, so anyway, listen, guys, it is time to bring on our guest, our special guest today. We've been looking forward to this for a while, so here he is on the line, Mr. Darnell White. Are you there, my brother?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Wardell?
Oh, man, it's so nice to hear your voice, brother. How you been?
Oh, I've been good, man. Just trying to keep mind, body, and soul together. You know, I guess that's about all we can all do.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, Danielle, you have, you know, first of all, I want to say I know your birthday is here. That's why you're in L.A., and I just want to wish you a birthday in advance. I'm not sure exactly which day this week your birthday is, but a happy birthday from all the Solar Records Radio.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate that. You know, I'm looking forward to getting with the family and, you know, just having a good time and, you know, just feel blessed that everybody is, you know, in good health at this time, you know?
Yeah. You know, when I called you earlier and you said, hey, I'm in the car with my sister, that reminded me of me when I go back to Philadelphia and I'm hanging out with my sisters and they drive me, you know, and it just really breaks my heart, man. So,
it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, and I'm the little brother. Right?
You're the little brother, and I'm the oldest brother.
Oh, okay.
All right, man. Well, I am. But you seem to be kind of tall. How tall are you?
Oh no, I'm not tall. I'm what? Oh, about 5'9" and a half. About 5'9" and a half.
You put that half in there. Is that like on a good day?
Yeah. There you go.
That's
funny.
So anyway, man, listen, I'm just so grateful to have you here, and I want you to kind of tell people a little bit about who you are, but I want you to understand that you can take your time, because I want your story. I want how you became who you are.
Well,
back to mom and dad days.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, my mom, she played piano for her church for about 45 years in Los Angeles, All Nation Church of God in Christ. And my sister played piano for her church. They were at different churches, and my sister played piano for her church, and she was also the choir director. And, you know, at the time, I was still a little kid, and my mom had a piano, but I never even thought to, you know, get on the piano. I just didn't feel I had the aptitude. You know, they did. They could just jump on the piano and start playing. Me, I could never do that. You know, I was always just kind of like, you know, plunking out songs. And the older I got, I remember I was walking home from school. I think I was in junior high school. And I was walking home from school, and I passed by a pawn shop. And I saw a flute in the pawn shop, and didn't know anything about the instrument, but it just looking at it through that window, it just mesmerized me. And I had the attitude, man, if I could ever get that thing, I think I could probably play it. You know, but at the time, you know, I was a kid. I wasn't really thinking about that, but I did go home and, you know, and I talked to my mom, and I told her, I said, Ma, I saw this flute in the pawn shop. Would you at least come down? You don't have to buy it for me. Just come down there and look at it with me. You know?
Boy, that's some good manipulation at a young age.
Yeah. But deep down inside, I wanted that thing. But I was thinking to myself, if I could get her down there, maybe she'll buy it for me. And I think I asked my mom about 3 times. And I think the 3rd time she was in the kitchen and she was cooking, and she turned off all the burners. She said, come on, let's go. And she drove me down there, I'll never forget this. The guy that was selling it, I think he sold it to my mom for like $10, $10 or $15. And,
whoa.
The guy said, you know, your mom's a really nice lady. I know your mom. And, you know, she works hard, you know, and if you get a chance, you try and play this thing, you know, so at least she'll know that you're trying to play it. And that's pretty much how it started off.
How old were you?
I was about 13, 14. Somewhere around there, yeah. And, you know, I got it home, and I remember – I ran upstairs, took it out the case, and I remember I remember blowing into it, couldn't make a sound, just blowing into it, and I remember passing out because I was hyperventilating.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, my mom came in the room and she was like, "Boy, what's wrong with you?" And I had just passed out from trying to play it. And then, gradually, the more I picked it up, I started slowly getting a sound out of it and a tone. And then, you know, there was a lot of musicians in my town, and I knew a couple of them, and they were already established. They were actually older than I was. They had bands. And so I would always go up and listen to one of the guys play saxophone. Mm. And, you know, I'd just sit there and listen to him. And he played a little flute, so he kind of showed me, you know, the fingering on it and, you know, how to get a tone. And I just, you know, just kept practicing and I was able to, you know, develop a tone on it. And then I started listening to jazz. I was listening to people like Wes Montgomery and, you know, Herbie Mann, Hubert Laws. And I used to copy Hubert Laws' solos. And what I didn't know at the time is when I was copying his solos, it was also developing my ear. You know, like if you had like a C minor chord, a D minor chord, and I was following all that. And, you know, and that helped me quite a bit. And, you know, just studying and going to school and you know, trying to study music theory and harmony. And, you know, and the more I played, the more developed my tone was. And that's what I really wanted to get. It wasn't so much the technique. I wanted to get my tone down.
Right.
Yeah. And, it took a lot of practice, okay. but hopefully I got there.
Of course you got there. So I'm going to really get intimate here. Now, I'm a drummer. And so, you know, there's this intimate thing. To me, in this drum, my drums are like, they're soul pleasing to me, right?
Exactly.
They please me from the inside out, right?
Exactly.
So what do you think it was that attracted you to that instrument particularly?
Well, like I said, when I first saw it, I didn't know anything about the instrument, but I remember listening to people playing the flute, and it was just, you know, it was just such a beautiful sound. And I know people that play those instruments. It's not so much the instrument that's playing; it's the soul of the person. You know, it's not the flute that's doing it; it's you, you know, that's doing it. And just a lot of life experiences and just listening to different people and that's what really turned my head to the flute. And then I really started getting into it. You know, I wanted to learn everything about it. But one thing about it, with music, it's infinite. You can never learn everything
on it
because it's almost like, okay, if this is like this, then this must be like this, then this must be like this. You know, it's infinite, you know.
But you
try and do the best you can.
Right.
You know.
So, but
and I'm still learning.
Tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong. But don't like most flute players transition into sax? Because you went and you were listening to a sax player. I'm wondering what stopped were you ever thinking about, well, maybe I should go to sax? But it's the first part of that question. It's the first part of that question, right?
Yeah. A friend of mine had a saxophone, and I remember, he let me play it, and I remember, well, I was winded from playing that thing, and I said, you know what, I think the flute is, you know, is just a little easier, and plus I was more attracted to the flute than I was the saxophone, and I could always see myself playing a flute, but you know, not a saxophone, and I think that's one of the things that drew me to it was just the beauty of the instrument and the sound, and I've always loved the sound of a flute. I mean, you know, Hubert Laws, Herbie Mann, Yusef Lateef, James Moody, you know, just so many flute players. And I just tried to pick up everything from each one of them, you know. And actually, I still do that to this day. Still do that to this day.
Now, Danielle, I mean, you grew up kind of like me. I you know, what I mean by that is that, you know, you grew up as a young man like in jazz, like I
right.
did. I grew up playing progressive jazz, right? But didn't your friends and say, why are you playing that kind of music? Why don't you play R&B and pop? What's wrong with you? Or did you ever feel left out? Like, because I know me as a jazz drummer, I'm playing this jazz in my basement constantly every day, trying to be the best jazz drummer I could be. And when I go outside, all the kids are listening to R&B, and they think I'm crazy,
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah.
He's on another moon or something.
Yeah, actually, that's the way it was for me. When I joined the band, it was a R&B band.
Mm.
And there was like about 8 or 9 of us in the band. And actually, there was a saxophone player and 2 flutes. A friend of mine, he played flute, and I also played flute. And, you know, the more we played, the more I was thinking to myself, I said, you know what, and there's nothing wrong with playing R&B. You know, I love R&B also. But for me personally, I said, if I want to grow on my instrument, I cannot keep playing R&B. You know, I really have to get down and study, you know, with music theory. And I just wanted to learn the instrument. And, you know, when I was playing the R&B, it was certain songs that I could play on the flute. But, you know, I wasn't really growing. So I left the band. And similar to what you were doing, you know, you were down in your basement or your garage and playing the drums. And I did the same thing on flute. You know, I left I really hated to lose. I really hated to leave the band, but for my personal growth and musical growth, I had to leave.
Right.
You know, to study, you know, and to try and get good on my instrument, I had to do that.
Mm-hmm. A question from overseas: if you play a wind instrument, does that make it easier for you to adapt to any other wind instrument?
Yeah, I believe it is, because I know, like, oboe, clarinet, flute. I don't know about the saxophone, but I know they have the same fingering. And I don't know if it would be hard for me to play those instruments, but I just know that it's the same fingering. And I think if I applied myself to something like an oboe or saxophone, I could probably play it, but I don't think I could play it as good as some of these cats that are out there now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what instrument, I mean, like these instruments, these wind instruments, aren't they already designed to be in a certain key?
Instruments designed to be in a certain group?
Key. Like they say, oh, this instrument is a B flat instrument, or it's a. I mean, I heard people say that, and I go, what?
Right.
Why are they saying?
Right.
What is that?
I have,
can you explain?
Yeah, my flute is a C. It's a C concert instrument. So, you know, on the piano, if you play a C on the piano, it's going to be a C on the flute. And then I also have an alto flute, which is say for instance, if you played a C on the piano, it would be a G. I think it's a G. Yeah, it'll be a G on an alto flute, because the difference between the alto and the C concert flute is they're 4 octaves lower.
Wow.
And I'm not too versed on saxophones, but I know saxophone. You know, they have like B flat saxophone.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
All right,
and I really played my alto flute, but when I do, it's kind of like a real deep, romantic type sound. And usually when I play it, I always try and play it with the echo on it, you know, because it's such a haunting sound. You know, it's a very beautiful sound. the alto flute, and it's, like I said, it's like four octaves lower than what my C concert flute is. So you get that real haunting sound with it. It's a beautiful sound, actually.
Okay. Well, listen, I want you to tell us, you know, by the way, I just want you to, if you don't know, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but we started off with this amazing song of yours called Butterfly. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful song. So how did you become a professional musician? How did that transition happen for you?
Wardell, it was just, you know, it was just a lot of hard work. It was just a lot of hard work. And, yeah, a lot of hard work. You know, you really have to kind of put, you know, if you really want to try and get, a depth on your instrument, you really have to, sometimes you just really have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice your time, you know, and things that you really would like to do. You have an instrument that you, that you're really into. So you got to dedicate yourself, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you really have to dedicate yourself.
Well, let me ask you the question like this: like, what was your first professional break? Like, how did it start for you, professionally?
My first professional break was with Barry White. And to be honest with you, I really like more writing songs than I do actually performing. And I had sent him a couple of songs, and and he heard them, and I didn't hear anything from him for a while, so I figured, well, you know, maybe he doesn't like them, so I'm just gonna have to, you know, continue to do my thing. You know, hey, it was a nice shot.
Hold it. Right now, how do you just out of the blue send a song to a celebrity? How did you get that connection?
Well, Barry's wife Glodine and my sister, they grew up together. They were best friends.
There's the connection.
Still to this day. And what happened was I was working on some music in a studio in a garage. I was trying to write some songs, and I had written two songs. And Barry was working on a Love Unlimited Orchestra album, and the title of it was called The Love Unlimited Orchestra Presents Webster Lewis. Now, I don't know if you know Webster Lewis, but he was a fantastic producer. And so I think he was out of Baltimore. I think he's out of Baltimore.
Okay.
And
Love Unlimited is out of Philadelphia, right?
No, you're talking about Philadelphia International. Love Unlimited is with Barry White. Barry White and the Love Unlimited, the girls. Or the orchestra, yeah. From L.A. Yeah, from L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, but my sister was, I believe she, my sister was having dinner with Glodine, and she had mentioned to my sister that Barry was working on some music, and my sister said, oh, well, you know, my brother is working on some music also. He has got a couple of songs. So I got a call from him. I got a call from him, and he said, hey, I want to hear your songs. So that's how I was able to get up to his house and let him listen to the songs. And, like I said, I he heard them. You know, we sat there and listened to them, and, you know, he was just kind of bobbing his head, looking up at the ceiling. And, he had things to do, and, you know, and I left, and I didn't hear anything from him. So I figured, well, you know, maybe he didn't like the songs. And then a couple of weeks later, he called me and said, hey, we're recording two of your songs. And man, I was shocked. I mean, I almost dropped the phone.
Two of them.
And what happened was, he says, And see, I'm not really a piano player, but I can plunk out a song. And the way that I play the piano is just, you know, I'm looking for the melody, then I'm playing the chord, and that, you know, and that's me. I'm not somebody like a Chucky Booker or whoever, but you know, when I hear a melody, you know, I can find the chords for it. But when I sent Barry this song, I was playing keyboards on it, and he said, "Hey, look, we're going to record two of your songs, and I want you to play piano on them." And I told him, I said, Barry, I'm not really a piano player. He says, "You might not be a piano player, but I like the feel of what you sent me, and I want you to play it." He said, "I want you to play it just like you sent it to me." And yeah, and the next thing,
and that,
you know,
and that was before sequencers, right?
Beg your pardon?
That was before sequencers.
I sent him a song on an acoustic piano, actually.
Wow.
And I put it on the tape, and just, you know, I played it at home. I was writing it, and I put it on a cassette tape and sent it to him, and you know, and he liked it. And you know, Barry probably, you know, he could hear songs, and he can, I guess he can sense the potential in a song, even though it was sent by, to me, being to me an amateur. But you know, and that showed you the creativeness of him. You know, he could hear a melody, and you know, he can run away with it. And so I sent him these two songs, and he wanted me to come up to the studio and record them. And when I walked in, didn't know who the guy was, but it was a bass player. It was Nathan East. And it was Nathan East. It was Webster Lewis and Ed Green, his drummer.
Oh, my goodness. Casey.
Yeah. And we so we started playing it. It was my song. And Barry was hovering over me while I was playing it. And I remember I was so nervous, my hands slipped off the keys. And I thought he was going to be so upset, but he looked at me and he said, "Hey, man," he said, "don't worry about it." He said, "We have all day." And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't want to be here all day, you know. So the second tape, you know, he was kind of guiding me through it while I was playing the keyboard. And, you know, he would nod for me to do the change, and I did it, and kept playing it, did another change, and then we just faded out the song. And it was only me, like I said, it was only me, Webster Lewis, Nathan East, and Ed Green. And then we recorded another one of my songs on his album, and I'm telling you, after I heard it, you know, with the strings, man, it was just incredible. I had never envisioned anything like that. And I learned a lot from it. Even though it was a one day studio moment, I learned so much from just watching him and how he, you know, how he put the orchestra together, what he wanted on the drums. And I can remember it like it was yesterday, you know.
Wow.
And it was just a beautiful time. And I really appreciate him and Glodine, you know, for giving me that opportunity, you know.
Absolutely.
To perform.
Absolutely.
And because they knew I was, you know, trying to work on my craft and my singing and the flute playing. I was trying to do all this different stuff. And like I said, I enjoy writing more than I do playing the flute. But I, you know, I do play every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But
That was how that
worked out.
Okay, that's great. Now let me just ask you. Now, you being, you know, a musician, and a song, when you sent him the music, and I don't want to dwell on too long because I really got to get to your stuff, but when you sent him the music, did it have lyrics and melody on it?
No, it just had a melody.
A melody.
Yeah, it was just just me playing the chords and the melody. And
okay.
he recorded it just like I, you know, just pretty much like
so
I
said.
So
he wrote the song with you. Is that what ended up happening?
I wrote song, and he would come in and add a couple of little things to it. And
so it
was pretty much co-writing it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so then,
pretty much.
Because you said it was just a melody, then you added the words later.
Yeah, well, there was no words to this. This was all instrumental on that on the Love Unlimited Orchestra album. So it was mostly it was just
a
chord.
Wow.
Chords and a melody.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a question from the UK. They want to know if since you are an instrumentalist, when you write songs, where does your inspiration come from titles of songs? How do you
for some reason that comes up when I'm thinking of songs, the titles, they just come to me really quick. And I know a lot of times when I'm in the studio, we're working on a song and I'll just say, okay, I'll name it this, but a lot of them have meanings behind it. That song Butterfly, I kind of dedicated that to my youngest daughter because I'll call her Butterfly. And that's where that title come from. That's my little baby girl. And like I said, sometimes I'll call her that. And but the titles, I don't know, they just seem to me pretty quick. And I try and get a mood for the song and say, I think this title would sound really, really nice with this.
Okay. All right. So first of all, I want to transition now from the writing part to you as an artist. So at what point, by the way, Astrid told me to tell you hello. She's
tell her hi. Tell her hi.
Yeah, she's one of the assistants.
She
hears you. Yeah, she's one of the
assistants. Yeah, really nice lady. Really nice lady.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah, she's awesome. She's a good girl. And so...
Hi, Astrid.
As a matter of fact, she's the one that asked me to get you on. So we're grateful for that. Yeah. So, let me just ask you this. So... going into your own, you decided to start doing your own stuff. How did that happen? What made you say, I'm going to do my own records?
I figured, wow, since I've done all this studying and playing and, that has always been my dream was to put music together and put a CD out. I figured everybody else was doing it. Darnell, why don't you try it? And it was a long road, but I just wanted to put my music out there and let people hear what, where I was coming from as far as my music, that's always been my ultimate desire was to put my own music out, and express what I how I felt. And so it's just been a desire, and I've always wanted to do it. I figured if somebody else can do it, I can do it. I never put any psychological roadblocks in front of me, I don't know if I can do that. And you pretty much have to have that mindset, if you want to, if you want to do things that are going to make you happy.
Right.
And so that's pretty much where that came from.
Well, we had your nephew Chucky Booker on here, maybe about a month ago, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Chucky and I go a long ways back, and so
And
so because I was doing all of the solo stuff with Shalimar and Whispers and Dynasty. And by the way, Ed Green, your guy, Ed Green was the only drummer that would come in and play on some of the stuff when I wasn't available. And I was pissed off. I was like, oh, my God. I didn't know who Ed Green was then. I just thought it was just another guy, you know, taking my spot. And I was so frustrated. I dropped out of college, man. I was like,
really?
I got mad at Leon. I said, man, you can't. You know, I came here. I went from Philadelphia, and you letting other people play in my spot because I'm in school. I said, look,
right.
I'll be here. Just tell me when, because I felt like it was my spot. And Ed Green, I'm so privileged now. I had no idea who he was when I was a young guy. And then once I started reading the credits, I was like, oh. I started checking up on him. I was like, oh, he played on all these records.
Yeah, man, it was the same with me when I recorded with the Love Unlimited Orchestra. You know, Nathan East, Ed Green, I didn't know who those guys were. I just thought, studio musicians, you know. And then, like you said, and then when I started reading their credits, I'm going, oh, my God, you know, this is crazy.
Right. Yes, and Nathan East is a beast on that bass.
He is a beast. And a really nice guy too.
Yeah, that's beautiful, right? Okay, so I want you to tell us about this song, Mr. Marvin. So, and I know that I see you have up here that your nephew, you have him, you're featuring him as one of the singers on the song.
Right.
You want to tell us about this song? Is this your new single?
That's on my CD, This Love.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Butterfly is going to be on the next single coming out, but Mr. Marvin is on the CD that's already out. The CD is called This Love. Yeah.
Okay, Butterfly. Ooh, Butterfly, yeah. I'm a big fan of that one. Ooh.
Really?
Goodness. Oh, Butterfly got me hooked.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I'll just have to try and write more songs like that then.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's just like, it is just, you know, it's just a perfect, and then you got that instrument that is just so sweet on top of it. It's like, whoa. It's hypnotizing. It relaxes you. It takes you there. Like, just chill for a minute. It's a great song. It's a great song. So, you're welcome. So tell me about Mr. Marvin. I'm going to play? Or did you want me to play another one of your songs? Because I have a few other ones here, too. I have Right Away. Right? Dance Right Away. And then what else do I have?
If my phone cuts off, I'm going to call you right back because I think the battery needs to be charged. But we can talk until then.
Okay.
And then I'll call you
right back. So while I'm playing a song, you can go ahead on and charge it. So, and you can hang up and charge if you need to. All right. So I have D Street and I have, you know, Mr. Marvin, whatever you want to, what you want to hear.
Mr. Marvin would be fine. Yeah, Mr. Marvin would be
okay,
fine.
Tell us about it.
Well, Chucky and I were in the studio and we were talking about, the bass player for Motown, James Jamerson. And Chucky was telling me the story how James Jamerson would always lay on the floor playing the bass. And we'd have a little conversation about Motown and my nephew knew I loved Marvin Gaye. And so we were laughing and joking in the studio talking about Motown and, you know, all the great groups they had. And then he just jumped on the keyboard and started playing Mr. Marvin. You know, he did the bass and then he did the keyboard. And he had finished pretty much all of it, and he told me to go home. He told me to go home and get a vibe for it on the flute. And he left certain parts of sections of the song for me to play flute on. And so that's what I did. I went home, listened to it about 1,000 times, and I wanted the flute to get that 70s type feel that Marvin Gaye had on me, because he had a couple of flutes on his song. And I wanted to get that real kind of like street sound on the flute. And so I was in the Northwest, and Chucky was in Los Angeles, and he sent me the song, and I recorded it by myself up at my place. And then, you know, that, and sometimes we would transfer files. And so I played the flute about, I think it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I put the solo down, and then I sent it down to him, and then was just kind of waiting to see, you know, what he thought about it. And, you know, and he loved it. And he said, okay, well, I'm going to mix it down. And you, once he mixed it and, you know, put his voice on it, you know, to me it was an incredible song, you know, because he did all the arranging for it. And I came in, pretty much played the flute, and that was, you know, that's pretty much it.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. You know what, let's take a listen to it and go ahead and charge your phone right now and
okay.
do it, whatever you have to do. And then
I'll
we'll be
right
back. All right, my brother. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
So this is Darnell White featuring Chucky Booker, and this song is called Mr. Marvin.
All right, man.
Bye.
funky down there. Oh man, my that's funky. Good gracious, you guys. Are
yeah,
good.
Yeah. That's, I was trying to get it. I was trying to get it funky.
Great job, great job, my brother. Man, oh man.
Oh,
hey,
thank you.
So you know, it's a nice thing. I've never had that experience to be working with my, you know, family and like that. And even though I have talented nieces and stuff back in Philadelphia, I've never had that experience like you did with your nephew. How did that feel working together?
Well, you know, Chucky and I have been, you know, his mom used to go to work, and I would take care of him when he was a kid. And I only lived like about two blocks from him.
Oh.
So he was always on the piano, and I would just walk up to the house with my flute, and you know, we would just start working on stuff, you know. And he was a kid, you know, but he's so gifted as a piano player. He's been playing since he was about 4 years old, and we would just start playing. I would show him little jazz patterns, and he would show me you know, chords and you know, R&B, and he was a big fan of George Clinton, Billy Preston, and that's how I learned a little bit of what he was doing, and then I would show him little jazz patterns. So we learned from each other, we learned from each other, and then we bought a Foxtec, a little four track. And we would just record on it. And you know, we would, at the time, we didn't know it, but we were kind of like honing our skills, you know, for something, you know, if it sounded right or is this the right mix. And we, you know, we did that over the years. And then it just kind of graduated to us, you know, just getting together and putting some, you know, putting some music out. So we have always played, you know, played music together and wrote songs together.
Oh,
and he's written songs for me. Yeah,
we love it, man. So, man, oh, man, hey, listen, I've had you for almost an hour. And I appreciate your kind of story. I love
it.
Yeah,
no problem, man. I appreciate you promoting my music and Astrid, both of you, and you know, just trying to get it out there, and, you know, and I really appreciate that, really do.
Right. Oh, you got it, man. You got it. And also, you know, just want to give a shout-out to Greg for making the flyers for you, and he made you some extras.
Yeah,
appreciate that. Thanks, Greg.
Uh-huh.
And but I want you to just kind of tell us and tell the people how, you know, they could follow you and support your career.
My new CD will be out, I believe, in a couple of months. Well, I think we still have a couple more songs to do and then mix down. But I have a website. It's called darnellwhite.banzoogle, just like it sounds, B-A-N-D, Z as in zebra, O-O-G-L-E. .com. And
okay,
that's my website. So if people want to read my bio, and there's pictures on there, and there's the CD is on there also. So if they wanted to purchase individual songs or the whole CD, it's on there. And pretty much it.
All right, man. Well, thank you. Appreciate you, man. We keep your legacy alive here. And we want to wish you a wonderful, wonderful birthday again. And
thank you.
You got it, man.
Yeah,
much love to your family.
You
got it, my brother.
And I appreciate you talking. Yeah, I appreciate you talking to me. And like I said, promoting my music, and you know, and I'll promote you guys also.
Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate it, man. Much love, man. God bless
okay.
you. And let's stay in touch, man. Let's not be strangers.
Hey, no problem.
And,
hey, man,
when
no
you,
problem
when you
at all.
Okay. Sounds good, man.
You'll be the first. Hey, when I drop it, you'll be the first to know.
Thank you.
Yeah, you'll be the first to know and hear it.
Okay, cool beans. All right, my brother.
All right, man.
Well, here.
Okay.
God bless. And take care.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see you around. And I'm going to end the show with Dance the Night Away. Is that cool?
Oh, yeah, that's a nice one. That's nice. I like that.
All right. Is there anything you want to say about it before I play it?
Yeah, I made Chucky sing on it.
Okay. All right.
It was an instrumental. I said, man, you need to sing on this.
Ah, that's so cool. So cool. Okay. All right. Baby.
Okay.
Well, here we go. God bless.
Bye-bye.
See you. We'll be right back, guys.
Same to you.
Right. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Dance the night, dance the night. Bad.
love it. I love it. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Solar Records Radio on Indie Jazz Day. We appreciate you so much, and what a great time we had with Darnell White, and that song right there was called Dance the Night Away. Thanks, Darnell. We appreciate you, my brother, and much more success and happy birthday to you. And so to the next to know that I have a very, very special guest coming on next, a very good friend of mine by the name of Rodney Taylor. So before I bring him on, check out his song. He's an amazing saxophonist. Check it out. This is called Passion. Be right back. Now, but I still love him.
okay, man. I they haven't called. You know, I haven't started using the cane yet, so I'm okay.
Oh my god.
Man, I'm so honored to be on your show, man. Such an honor to have be on here with you, man.
Well, you know, man, you know, also, Rodney, he had his own show. I had another station, and Rodney had, well, how long was your show, 4 hours?
Something like that, man. Yeah, man.
You and your wife, and they would do, Rodney would do his jazz show during the week. And then on the weekend, him and his wife would do like a relationship show. I had a station called, what was it? I don't want to know. xradio.biz. It was old school.
Yeah.
Old school. And it was inside the mall. And we used to have so much fun inside that little space. And
oh, man.
Great.
It was a blast.
And I know. And you had some amazing guests coming on to your show. I mean, you had George Duke on there as well, right? I mean,
I still get people commenting on that interview, man. It was really, and the cool thing about it, man, it was supposed to be like a 15-minute interview, man. Me and George stayed on talking to each other for like 2 hours. You know, he was so cool, you know. And it had so much history, man. Just to condense
so
in 15
nice.
Minutes. Wouldn't have been cool, you know, it wouldn't have been doing him no justice, though.
Right. So why don't you, I mean, man, Randy, you've been doing this for a long time, too, man. So we, you know, I want you to tell the listeners your story, man. Like, Darnell, we just finished interviewing him. He plays flute. And most of the flute players go to sax. Did you ever play flute?
You know what, man? It's a funny little story. I did not even really attempt to play flute until I got into high school, right? And, man, I took the flute home, you know, and over the summer and thought I was just going to be, this is going to be easy. Man, I started blowing that flute, and I started feeling lightheaded.
That's what Darnell said. He said he passed out.
I was like, man, let me get back to my clarinet and my saxophone, man. I ain't trying to be walking around dizzy all day. So, man, you know, I never really got into playing flute, but, you know, with technology the way it is, man, I have this wind synthesizer, and I have some programs that sound really, really close to an authentic flute. So I do a lot of flute stuff electronically.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. So I still get my flute on.
You get your flute on. All right. Cool beans.
Yeah.
So let's go to your story, man. I want to get to your story. Like, how did you become Rodney Taylor, the saxophone player? Did you choose the instrument, or did it choose you?
Now, how far back you want to go?
Listen, you got time.
This is where it started. Man, my family, we were living in, I believe we lived in, we were living in L.A., and we moved, so I changed school, right? So, man, the school that I went to, 93rd Street Elementary School, they had an assembly. And the assembly was, you know, they had a little orchestra there, elementary school orchestra, man. I was in fourth grade, 10 years old, and I saw these kids playing these instruments, man, clarinets, strings, trumpets, you know, percussion section. And, man, I had never seen kids play instruments, man, and I immediately knew that I was supposed to do that, you know. Mm. So I went home, man, and first I asked my music teacher if I could play an instrument. He said, "Well, I don't know if we have any instruments left, you know." And he said, "I have to see." So then I went home, And I bugged my mom and my grandfather that evening to death, told them I wanted to play instruments so bad. And, you know, the rental price was only, it was only $3 to rent the instrument, you know. But I begged and pleaded, and they said, oh, well, okay, we'll see. We think we can make that happen, you know. Because, man, my family, you know, we were not wealthy. We were kind of poor at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened, you know, and typical inner city, you know, kid growing up, right? So
right.
I went to the school the next day, and I sought out the music teacher, and I said, his name was Shelly Thomas. I said, Mr. Thomas, I just got to be a part of this orchestra. I want to learn, you know, so bad. And he was like, well, like I told you yesterday, I'm kind of out of instruments. I have one old instrument, and I don't want to give that to you, you know, because it's not in the best condition, and it's old. I said, I don't care. Whatever it is, I want to play it. I want to do this. So he said, well, this is all I have. And he showed me this old, you know, moldy silver clarinet, man. And, I mean, it was old. It was moldy. That, you know, green was on it, you know.
Oh,
and I said, I don't care. I want to play it. So, you know, I took the little paperwork home to my mom, and my mom was like, well, I don't know about this, you know. My grandfather said, let him do it, you know. And so he said, here, you know, and he gave me the money. I went back the next day, and I got the instrument, man, and, you know, started the little beginning winds class, man. And, you know, I practiced and I practiced and I practiced. End of the school year, you know, the sixth graders left, and they had all the good instruments. So I guess my teacher saw the dedication, right? So he gave me a nice new one to take home over the summer. So I was like, cool. So, I took that instrument home over the summer, and I practiced, and, you know, went further in the book that I was actually supposed to and really started learning. And came back the next year, man, and my music teacher was kind of amazed. He said, wow, you learned all this on your own? I said, yeah. So they used to have these PTA scholarships, right? And, man, he was like, wow, I think you could actually be a candidate for one of these PTA scholarships. So, you know, he worked with me, practiced with me. And then I, you know, applied for the scholarship, and it was about, I don't know, back then we started school in September, and I think the scholarship was, I think the audition was about, I want to say January. So, man, worked really hard, went and did the scholarship, you know, and didn't have anybody to accompany me. You know, most of the other kids, they would hire a piano player or something to accompany them. Man, you know, I couldn't afford none of that. So I went in, you know, and just, you know, zealous and all, you know, all confident, I guess, and, you know, in my young age, didn't really know I was not following protocol. I go and I give the judges the piano accompaniment, right? And I said, here's the songs I'm going to play. You can follow along if you like, you know, you know. And, man, I said, well, can I start? He said, whenever you're ready. So I start playing these songs, man, and I'll never forget. One was a theme and variation of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and the other one was a concert piece called Gavotte, right? And so I'm playing this clarinet, man, and they're following along, and they're looking at each other and looking at me, and they say, well, how long have you been playing? And I'm like, well, maybe about a year now. And they're like, No, you've not playing like this. You've only been playing a year. I said, no, I've been playing, you know, a year and a few months. And they were like, well, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it, blah, 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 blah. Let me go, man. And a few months later, man, I won one of the scholarships.
Whoa.
So, yeah, so the scholarship was like a $100 scholarship for private lessons. Back then, I think you could do a lesson for like $5 an hour, you know. Oh, no, it was $5 a half an hour. And my teacher was, you know, Shelly Thomas. He also had a private lessons studio. So I don't know if you remember, man. Do you remember CBA recording studio off of, I think it was 54th and Clawson, or 54th and Crenshaw, I mean?
No.
You don't remember that? Okay. No. Anyway, man, it was a real popular spot back in the 70s. But
I'm not from California.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because you would have remembered that spot, man.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of history there. But but anyway, man. I won a scholarship. He gave me private lessons. You know, lasted. You know, I don't know, maybe a year or so. And just continued to study, man. Graduated, went to junior high school, and when I got in the eighth grade. I repeated that and won another scholarship for private lessons. And so we continued on. But by the time I was in the eighth grade, man, I had started playing with the Compton Symphony Orchestra, you know, which was really cool. I'll never forget. It was me and a brother by the name of Reggie Young, who played trombone for Earth, Wind & Fire now, and a guy by the name of Arthur Manley, a trumpet player. And so we were the only three kids playing in this orchestra full of adults, you know, and adults would look at us like, what are these kids doing in here, you know, but we would get in there and read the music right alongside of them, you know. So that was really cool, you know. So, man, we went on from there, like I said, won another scholarship, went to graduated. I was going to Drew Junior High School at the time. So graduated, went to Locke High School, man, and that's when you know, a lot of the fun really began because when I got to the 11th grade, there was a teacher and producer by the name of Reggie Andrews. You might know Reggie. Do you know Reggie?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, Reggie produced that big song, Let It Whip, by the Dazz Band. He wrote and produced that and, you know, a bunch of the other Dazz Band stuff. So anyway, man, Reggie was at Fremont. He transferred over to Locke, and a lot of his best students, music students, came over. And, man, it got really crazy. He had people like, you know, Don Myrick coming in and giving us, you know, pointers and lessons and stuff. And, you know, Gerald Albright, Patrice Rushen, and Dugu, and all kind of people was coming over, man. We were in high school, and these people were, you know, helping us to learn music, you know.
Wow.
So it was when I got to 11th grade, man, you know, and I really started noticing that, you know, clarinet was all the nerds were playing clarinet, man. All the cool guys were playing sax. So that's how I switched over, man. I saw all of the cool guys getting all the girls, even though I was still too shy to get the girls. But I switched over and started playing sax, man, and you know, it just went from there. But the interesting thing, man, even when I was in junior high school, man, I was, you know, learning to play by ear, and I'd be transcribing, you know, Grover Washington, Mr. Magic, and all of that kind of stuff on clarinet. So they used to tease me, say, man, you're the funky clarinet player, you know. So we went on from there, man.
I have a question for you from overseas, but I also want to recognize my brother Don Fleming's on the line. What's up, Don?
I'm good. How are you? Hey, Rodney, how are you?
Hey, Don, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Good to finally get a chance to talk to you and just listen to all those gems that you're dropping, man. From a fellow saxophone player, man, I'm in awe.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, man. From a fellow sax man, that means a lot, brothers. I appreciate it.
And well, I know about the whole clarinet thing, man. you kind of remind me of me because, you know, and the flute. Oh, God, that flute story was hilarious because my wife plays the flute, and when, you know, she had hers, I would call myself try to mess with it and and the whole face turned blue trying to blow in that thing.
it'll get you high.
No doubt.
Yeah, Darnell White, who was just on the interview earlier, who is a flute player, said when he first started, he went up in his room and he kept blowing. He couldn't get no sound out of it. He kept blowing, and next thing you know, he passed out.
he
passed out.
I don't doubt it, man.
Like, whoa. Yeah, my condolences to you guys. Hey, just real quickly, this sir from overseas wanted to know, what did your parents think about you choosing a career in music?
You know, man, I think that everybody knew that it was inevitable. You know,
okay.
once I started playing and once everything, you know, really started happening. And you know, they just knew, you know, that was going to be my path. Now, I did, you know, there were some hard times. You know, like when I graduated high school, man, I went on tour, you know, the very next month with this gospel group, Phil and Brenda Nicholas. And,
uh-huh.
man, you know, I'd actually played on their first record when I was in high school. It was my first professional recording session. And so upon graduating, man, we went to this big festival in Chicago called Harambe, right? You know, big gospel music festival.
Yeah.
So, man, everything was cool because we were there for a couple of weeks. I got back, and then it's like no gigs for a while. So, you know, that's when you start hearing, well, you know, you better get a real job. I don't know. Music is so unstable, you know. And so, you know, which they were right. And, you know, I've worked my share of odd jobs to support myself over the years. But, man, overall, you know, people knew, you know, my family and anybody that knew me knew that was going to be my path. And I was so stubborn about it that I wasn't going to give up, you know, even if I had to do something to pay the bill, something else to pay the bill. You know, so, you know, I didn't really totally choose music. It kind of chose me, man. I mean, that's just kind of where I live,
right,
you know, and the beautiful thing about life is that we all have a gift, you know, we're all gifted
right.
in some area. And man,
right.
when you can find that gift early on and
mm-hmm.
pursue it, man, your life becomes fulfilled, you know, even if you're not making, you know, tons of money, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's kind of
what happened, man. So
I wanted to ask you, when you got that scholarship, your mom must have been so excited.
Oh my God, dude, she was, man. And the thing about it, what was kind of deep, man, is like, my grandfather lived with, you know, well, actually my mom, I would say my grandfather and mom were, you know, my parents. My father wasn't around. My mom and dad had separated, right? Or actually mm-hmm. divorced. So my grandfather was almost like a father to me, man. And he was like, you know, my rock. You encouraged me, you know, to do it. And matter of fact, he even got one of his brothers to buy me, or not to buy me, but to give me a clarinet that he had around the house. So, you know, it was crazy because right around the same time that I won that scholarship, man, my grandfather passed away. You know, and in a weird way, man, I carry him with me to this day. Because he fueled me with so much passion when I was such a kid, right?
Right.
To pursue that, you know. And so,
right.
You know, I still, you know, I can still feel him being a cheerleader of mine in my spirit, even though he hasn't, you know, he hasn't been around to really see what I've, you know, what I was able to do through music, man.
Right.
You know,
right. So. That's awesome. Well,
yeah.
I want you to tell us. How did you become? How did your professional career kick in? Where did it start with?
You know, I played for probably all the way through. I graduated. You know, well, I don't even want to say that because that's going to open me up for some Wardell Podge jokes. When I graduated.
He graduated in the third grade.
I was talking about the year. But once I graduated, went on tour, man, you know, things kind of, they weren't, you know, really, I mean, you know, I worked and I did some professional things, but it wasn't like a constant thing, man. So I started working at Occidental Life Insurance as a file clerk for a while. But I would still do gigs on the weekend and sessions. I remember doing some sessions, man, where I would stay up all night. I'd get home at, 4 or 5 in the morning and have to be at work at 8,
Wow.
But I made it through.
Oh,
yeah, man.
Wow.
But so that's that's what we did, and that's the kind of dedication that, that God allowed me to have, and that's the kind of dedication it took,
Right.
But I still have to say, man, really feeling Brendan Nicholas, because at the time when I was recording, and they were doing gospel, but they were contemporary gospel. And if you Google them, man, they were doing, they did really well in the gospel arena. They started an indie label. They got picked up and were distributed by Sony. Later on, I did a gospel project, that was also through their label, distributed by Sony. So it was kind of them, man. And, I was kind of just happy, but I started kind of hearing this voice, this inner voice telling me, what you're doing is great, man, but your gift is too vast to be limited to just one genre, And you with your kind of testimony and your kind of inspiration, you need to reach masses of people and not just limit yourself, And
yeah.
So, man, I started doing, opening myself up and started doing like some local clubs. This place is called The Townhouse when I really first started getting into playing a lot of jazz and stuff. And I was playing with this incredible keyboardist named Myron McKinley. He's now Earth, Wind & Fire's musical director. A bass player named Andrew Goucher, who's played all over the place with tons of people. And, we had a few different drummers that would play. One guy, Cedric Anderson, another guy, they call him D-Lo, his name's Derek. But all these guys, man, who were just great playing with all these other people at the time. And, I just kind of started playing with them, man. And from that point, started getting a lot of, local recognition and, just started playing around town, man. So that's kind of when it really kicked off. I think from there, my first tour was with Doc Powell, who was used to be the guitarist for Luther Vandross. And he had a smooth jazz record out. So I started touring, doing some tour work with him and stuff like that. From then on, man, just people kind of started hearing and started doing some other things. So,
wow.
Yeah,
that's,
man.
Awesome. And so you decided, because I remember you were working with Nita Baker too, and you did you start your solo career before Nita Baker or after?
I always, like kind of being the front guy and being a solo guy. I mean, I'll do things in horn sections and stuff like that, but I've always felt like I had a voice,
mm-hmm.
that spoke to people. Besides, when you're in a horn section, you're a little bit confined to what the section is doing. But
right.
I always wanted to be that solo guy, and a lot of my gigs were always like me as a solo player with a vocalist or something like that, So when I got, the call to play with Anita, it's funny. I actually had moved to Vegas and was going to be a part of Gladys Knight's show, and I was going to play during her wardrobe change. And then Bubba decided he wanted to do this soft shoe tap dance thing, tribute to Sammy Davis Jr. So mm-hmm. I'm in Vegas, with no gig, and I'm trying to find some local work, man, and I just was not feeling the music scene in Vegas. I mean, these guys were playing all, 6-8 hours, not making hardly no money, and I was like, man, this ain't L.A., this ain't what I'm used to. And I got a call, man, from a friend of mine, Don Wyatt, incredible keyboardist, and he was like, hey, man, Anita's looking for a sax player. You interested? And I'm like, heck yeah, I'm interested. So, he said, well, man, she's going to be at the Greek. can you come down and audition the week while we're here? And I was like, man, I'm there. So I went down on Thursday to audition, and when you know, Anita, something came up and Anita couldn't be there. But they recorded me and another good friend of mine, you know, and we were the two candidates. And, you know, I played her songs, you know, I think it was the song You Bring Me Joy and another song called Watch Your Step. And they taped us. And then they said, hey, man, you know, is there something else that you'd like to hear her play, you know, or you'd like for her to hear you play? And I said, sure, you know, and I just kind of started freestyling, playing, you know, whatever I was feeling at the time and stuff like that. And it was like, oh, okay, cool. So, man, they were like, okay, well, you'll probably hear something, you know, on Friday, because their gig was on Friday. I was like, okay, cool. Friday came and went, didn't hear nothing. I was like, okay, well, I guess they didn't, you know, they weren't feeling it. So, man, next thing you know, Saturday came, and I was like, okay, well, I guess it's really not going to happen. And, man, Saturday night, about 11 o'clock at night, man, I get a call. You know, hey, this is such and such. This is Anita's manager. You know, Anita wants to know if you could be on a plane tomorrow to meet us in San Francisco.
Whoa.
I was like, yeah, I think I could do that. You know, so hopped on the plane, you know, got there and, you know, had to go straight to the venue because didn't really have time to go and, you know, check into the hotel and any of that kind of stuff, man. So got off the plane, went right to there, went to the sound check. As soon as I walked in, you know, Don was like, hey, Anita Rodney's here. She's like, oh, okay, okay. Well, we're going to pull your horn out. We're getting ready to do this song. So we played, what was the song? You Bring Me Joy. And, you know, came time for the solo. You know, I had my little wireless set up and everything. So she was out singing stage, and I walked up to her and just played the song, played the solo, you know, right in the center stage and finished and came back, you know, I was on my way back. She's cut off the band. I was like, oh, man, I shouldn't have went out there to her, you know. And, man, she looked at me, started shaking her head. She said, oh, you not scared. I said, no, I'm not scared. She said, he ain't scared. She started looking at everybody, you know. She said, okay, all right, this is going to work out fine. So, you know, from that point on, man, you know, that was my little spot in the show to walk out and play to her during that song. You know, as time went on, you know, I started becoming more and more part of the show. So, you know, it was cool, man. It was cool. A couple of times, man, she even gave me her stage, man, which they say she does not do. You know, but she would walk off stage and just leave me there, you know, and I'd be like, wow, is this, you know, is this really happening? I'm, you know, at Radio City Music Hall, and Anita Baker just left me to her audience, you know.
Wow.
But it was really cool, man. Really cool.
Yeah.
So we did that for about, you know, 3 years, and then after that, man, there was, you know, some things happened, some issues, political issues that we won't really go into. You know, when you have a high-profile gig like that, man, it's funny. You always got guys kind of gunning for your gig, you know. So there was a few things, that happened. So I end up leaving the gig. And, you know, at that point, I was like, well, man, look, I'm ready to go ahead and be that solo artist that I've always thought about. So that's when I really started, you know, recording my own stuff and, you know, all of that, you know. Had a little tiny little 8-track VS-880 machine, an old Atari computer.
He went back. Oh,
yeah, man. Yeah, way back then. It just started recording stuff, you know, and was really, you know, not too, I was going to say I was too ignorant to know any better, but, man, the passion that just drove me, just I just used what I had, you know, what I could afford at the time. to, you know, to make records, you know. So, you know, and you know, Anita's gig paid well, but we mainly toured over the summer and over Christmas, you know. So, you know, it was cool, but it wasn't like, you know, deep pockets. It wasn't like I can come back and buy a house, right?
Right.
So, you know, I had what I had, man, and, you know, I recorded that first CD called Blow by Blow, you know, and, you know, I didn't have any money for any radio promotion or anything, but it sold really, really well for what it was, you know.
Okay.
And,
well,
you know, I was really happy, and then we came back with this one. Huh?
Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was very grassroots.
And then, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Say it one more time.
No, it just seemed like it was very grassroots, and I think that approach really just kind of lays in the authenticity and really just very telling of who you are as, you know, as an artist to go that route, or I guess you felt you didn't have those resources. It was just amazing to me, but I didn't mean to cut you off. I wanted to kind of jump in, and I wanted to ask you, because, you know, Anita Baker, you know, playing with Anita Baker and all of these, pretty much your whole resume, have you, I guess the question is kind of from a, I guess, a jazz, the critics as far as who are jazz purists, did you ever get that, those notions from the jazz purists? Because I'd always hear Patrice Rushen went through it, James M. Toomey went through it, Brenda Russell, Lisa Fisher, as far as not feeling like a lot of purists that jump on you for going that, you know, in that R&B route. Have you ever got any of that flack? Or, and how did you cope, and how did you cope with that, if you did?
Oh, man, I do. I've done straight-ahead gigs, and I do, you know, I used to do. I haven't done a lot of it recently, but I've done straight-ahead stuff, and, you know, and that's cool, but I, you know, and people do try to criticize you because, oh, you're not a jazz purist, blah, 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 blah. I tell them, I say, look, man, I can play. We can get together and do a jam session somewhere, anywhere, and I can, you know, we'll play straight ahead and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not only a musician, I also have to be an entrepreneur and a businessman. And I have to put my music where there's a market for it. You know, and right now, you know, like the market is the, you know, the whole smooth jazz thing. That's where the market is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and there is still, don't get me wrong, there is still a straight ahead jazz market, but it's not as big as what smooth jazz is doing now, you know, and even more importantly, what indie is doing right now, you know. So I, you know, I'm going that route. Because, man, I have a family, you know, and I like to pay my bills.
But
it's all creativity, man. And one of the problems, I think, and this is going to lead me into my next project and what I'm currently doing. But, man, shows like The Voice and like American Idol, where people call in and vote on artists and everything. Man, I am so anti that, it's ridiculous. And I'll tell you why. When we were kids, right, it was kind of like iron sharpens iron. We're coming up young, and you do talent shows, and you get to see what other people are doing. Well, when we get older and we're all professionals, we're all doing what we do. So I feel like, man, we really shouldn't – it shouldn't be a competition. People should just be able to look at what you do as an artist, and they're either going to enjoy it or they aren't. You know, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, they'll enjoy it. But I just don't think, man, that music should be a competition. It should be, it's there for,
mm-hmm.
for you to enjoy, you know, for enjoy everybody. And, I mean, we all have different
mm-hmm.
levels. We all have different expectations of ourselves. But, you know, my competition is myself. You know, and so what I've done, man, and I've had this idea for some years now, and this is a whole nother story, and I know I've been doing a lot of talking and whatnot, but, man, because of that, I have actually started a TV show, man. I went to school. I learned editing. I've been studying video and TV and film for like the past 10 years. And I have a TV show that we are in production now called The Indie Journey. And what I do is I bring on artists, and not just music, but, you know, authors, actresses, you know, people who did independent film, painters. And we focus and we spotlight all kinds of artists on the show, man, and to give people an idea of what people are doing independently. And, you know, you kind of got, when you do that, you know, you've got to be somewhat of a, not only that artist, but you got to be an entrepreneur and all of that. So the show is set to expose these people to the masses and then also to inspire other people out there who have their passions, who, you know, hopefully it'll inspire them to follow what they want to do and, you know, keep this independent, you know, artist thing going.
Beautiful.
Well, listen, Rodney, I want you to know, I can't believe, I don't know, when we started, it was 54 minutes. Now we only have 11 minutes left. I don't know.
Oh, you got 11 minutes left of the show, yeah.
I can't believe
I've been enjoying it.
Man, we're enjoying your story, man. It's amazing. And it's so sad when it stuff at the end. But listen, I want you to tell people how they can, you know, this the place that they can go to support you, your music and stuff, you know, where you have a website or anything, people can follow you and see
social media.
And then I need you to let me know what song am I playing, Fantasy or Chocolate, when you're finished with that information.
Okay. Fantasy is a new song that has not been released yet. It features Vivian Love, who is an incredible vocalist who sings in my band. So we can, you know, I'll let you decide. It's a ballad, but it's a really nice song. The other song, Chocolate, is a real funky kind of piece, almost a throwback, a little bit of a throwback to somebody like Maceo Parker. So you might want to play that when it ended.
Okay.
But if you Google me, Rodney Taylor, you know, saxophonist, I will come up. My music is everywhere from Amazon to iTunes to, you know, pretty much all the musical platforms out there. YouTube, if you want to see I have two proof of concept episodes of the show, and they are under the name The Indie Spotlight. So if you go on YouTube and search The Indie Spotlight, you can see the actual TV show, the proof of concept episodes. But man, we are scheduled, and we've actually cut our first three musical segments, and I've had like Daryl Williams, Gail Johnson, and this other brother named Tatin Katendik, who's a phenomenal keyboardist. So man, I'm so excited about the TV show. Also, I believe right around the same time the TV show is released, I'm going to be releasing my next CD or. Man, I guess you would call it a streaming project right now, right? Is anybody still buying CDs?
Right,
but
yeah.
The music project,
right.
I don't know. So the music project and the TV show should be hitting right around the same time. We don't know what network we're going to be yet. We're just going to put together, you know, a season's worth of episodes, and take it and go shopping with it.
Awesome. Well, that
yeah.
sounds good, man. I'm so proud of you. You've always been, from the day I met you, you had this gift of entrepreneurship in you. And you guys have said, this guy is so much fun. I've not seen anybody play the saxophone. I have so much fun playing the saxophone. And whether it's a jamming song or it's a romantic song, it's like he takes you there with him. So, you know, you got to see him.
It's language of love.
He's absolutely amazing. Amazing. He's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I've referred him to funerals. people that need someone to play. I was like, get Rocky to play. He will make you feel better. I'm telling you. So, I mean, he's so talented. It's just amazing. And
I did so many memorials for over the pandemic, when the pandemic, when people were passing away.
Oh.
I was doing so many YouTube memorials, wow, man, and streaming. It was crazy.
Streaming?
But it's
wow,
such a blessing, man. I've always tried to come from a place of emotion with my music, and you know, I guess
it's
working.
Well. Mm-hmm. You do it well. Like Anita Baker said, you're not shy. You come right up. He's in everybody's face. Let's do it. Let's have a good time. And that's a blessing, man. That's a gift that you have. And so thank you, man, so much. Appreciate
thank
you coming
you,
on the show.
I talk so much. You didn't get a chance to hardly ask me nothing.
That's okay. I enjoy hearing you talk.
Man, you opened up some gems. You just don't know. No, though, seriously, let me say this, too. And I know we're a little pressed for time. I think what you said, the things that you said, your journey and what you were able to share, you just don't know who needed to hear that. And thank you for that. We really appreciate that. And from my humble opinion, and thank you so much. And I got to get you on my show. But anyway, that's another story down
Let's
the road.
Let's do it.
Go ahead, whatever.
Let's do it. Okay,
hey,
I'm shutting up now.
I'll hook y'all up. All right, man. Well, so I'm going to play Chocolate, and tell us a little bit about
Chocolate
before I close out the show with Chocolate. Tell us a little bit about Chocolate.
Chocolate is just a fun tune, fun little funky song, man. I was just messing around with this little rhythm, bop, 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 and you'll hear that theme all, you know, repeated through the song. And you know, sometimes, man, when inspiration hits, you just kind of go with it. So it's just a little fun, funky piece. And I was like, you know, this is kind of, tune is kind of funky, kind of sweet, kind of, you know, black inspired. So let's call it Chocolate.
Cool beans. All right. I just want to say thanks to all the listeners. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us on Indie Jazz Day. Thanks to our guest, Darnell White, Rodney Taylor, and I want to thank our assistant producers, Greg and Astrid. Thank you guys so much for blessing us and helping us do this. And listen, guys, have a blessed rest of your day. We appreciate all of you guys. And now we're going to go out with this beautiful song by Rodney Taylor called Chocolate. Have a blessed night. See you later, everyone.
hear.